program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Audio Journal's Young at Heart. The book selections for this hour are designed for elementary and middle grade listeners. This program is supported in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. My name is Lavender, and I'm happy to be with you today. I will finish reading the book, The Return of the Homework Machine, by Dan Gutman. And because we will have more time today, I will start a new book, also by Dan Gutman. It is from the series My Weirdest School, and the book is Dr. Floss is the Boss. Chapter 9, May. Kelsey Donnelly, Grade 6. Even now, I still can't believe it happened. It was all so fast. One second he was standing there, and the next second he was gone. May I have a tissue, please? Judy Douglas, Grade 6. For a moment, we were all frozen. We just stared, like statues. Then we all rushed down the steps. Everybody was freaking out, even Mr. Murphy. And nothing freaks him out. Mr. Murphy, 6th grade teacher. This was not the first time I had seen a man die, but it was the first time I had seen a man die by accident. It was my fault. I was the adult in charge. I had failed. It's a failure I will have to live with for the rest of my life. Sam Dawkins, Grade 6. I leaned my head over the ledge, and the others held on to my legs so I wouldn't fall off. At first, I didn't see anybody down there. Then I saw somebody floating in the river, face down. He wasn't moving. He must have hit the rocks on the way down. Brenton Damagachi, Grade 6. It was my fault. I could have stopped it. I could have stepped between the two of them while they were fighting. But I froze, and in that instant, a man died. If only I had a time machine so I could go back and erase that mistake. Kelsey Donnelly, Grade 6. I hope he didn't feel too much pain. I was pretty sure he was dead. You don't survive a fall like that. It would be a miracle for him to still be alive. I said a prayer. Ronnie Teotwaki, Grade 6. I felt really alone. The others were part of a group. Milner was gone, probably dead, and it was my fault. I was the one who brought them in on the treasure hunt. If I hadn't, he would still be alive today. Judy Douglas, Grade 6. I was crying. He wasn't a nice man. I didn't like the guy or anything, but even so, you don't want to see that happen to anybody. I had never even been to a funeral before, and now, in the space of a few minutes, I had seen one dead man and another man die. I was in shock. We all were. We just sat there silently for a long time. Ronnie Teotwaki, Grade 6. What should we do? That's what we were all asking. My first thought was that we should keep our mouths shut. I didn't want to tell anyone else what happened. Nobody else had to know. Nobody could tie us to Milner. But I realized that was stupid. The police were eventually going to find Milner's van parked at Lee's Ferry. Somebody was going to find his raft. People had probably seen me meeting with him at the visitor center. Somebody would report him missing. And I was sure that one of the others would spill the beans. They're all so honest. They wouldn't know how to tell a lie if their lives depended on it. Mr. Murphy, 6th grade teacher. There was no question in my mind what we had to do. We needed to alert the police right away. I'm not just saying that because I'm sitting in a police station. It was the right thing to do. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. When Mr. Murphy said we had to notify the police, I didn't argue. Judy Douglas, grade 6. I don't know why we did it, but we all hugged. Even Ronnie, he was part of our group now, too. He was a jerk and all, but he had been through it just like us. When I first met Kelsey and Snick, I didn't like them either. But we had been through a lot together with the homework machine, and we became best friends. Mr. Murphy took out his cell phone to call the police, but he couldn't get a signal. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. I went over to Ronnie and told him to give me the GPS. I didn't ask him. I told him. And he gave it to me. I opened it right up there and pulled out the chip. The little red light was still attached to it, and it was blinking. It's amazing that such a tiny thing could cause so much trouble. I put the chip in my pocket. I gave the GPS back to Ronnie. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. Snick said that we should agree on our story so we would all say the same thing to you police folks. Well, we jumped all over him. What story? We had no story. We would just tell the truth. What happened to Milner was an accident. He was crazy. He would be fine today if he hadn't gone loco and started swinging that sword around. Mr. Murphy did what he had to do to protect us from getting hurt. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. They were all mad at me just because I used the word story. I didn't mean we should lie about what happened. I just wanted us to be consistent so nobody would get into any trouble. One thing was amazing to me. The one person who wasn't sure that telling the truth was the right thing to do was Mr. Murphy. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. Mr. Murphy said we should tell the truth, of course, but not necessarily the whole truth. He said that if the police found out that he fought with Milner and threw him down those steps, they might decide that a crime had been committed. And if Milner turned up dead, the crime would be murder. It made a certain amount of sense, at the time anyway. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. I thought Mr. Murphy was right. What purpose would it serve to tell everybody there was this big fight and that he threw Milner down the steps? We could just say we saw a body floating down the river. That was the truth. I did see a body floating down the river. Leave it at that. People fall off the cliffs in the Grand Canyon all the time, right? Milner could have been one of those guys who liked to pee off high places. Or maybe he was getting his picture taken and took a few too many steps back. After all, Ronnie said Milner was drinking. If the body was found, there would be alcohol in his bloodstream. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. We shook hands on it. I thought that would be the end of it. Judy Douglas, grade 6. I didn't feel good about what we decided. We saw more than just a man floating in the river. We saw a man get out of control with a weapon, and we saw Mr. Murphy disarm him. In the process, the man fell down the steps and over the ledge. That's what we saw. I'm not very good at lying. And withholding the whole truth is not that different from lying. Some people can stare you right in the face and say something they know isn't true. I don't want to be one of those people, but I wish I could do that sometimes. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. We were about to climb down when I remembered something. The treasure. They hadn't even seen it yet. I took them into the room where the Buddha and all that other gold stuff was. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. It was amazing, just amazing, like a museum carved into the rock. I never saw so much gold before. I couldn't really appreciate it, though, because of what had just happened with Milner. Judy Douglas, grade 6. We didn't know what to do about it. Should we take some of that stuff with us to prove we found it? Leave it? Contact the Historical Society when we got back? It was Ronnie, of all people, who came up with the best idea. Ronnie Tiotwaki, grade 6. I said we should forget about the treasure. Don't tell anybody about it. Just leave it there for some future generation to discover. The treasure was nothing but bad luck anyway. Maybe it was cursed, like the tomb of King Tut. That Kincaid guy discovered the treasure, and he was dead. Now Milner was dead. I didn't want anybody else to die. We all just wanted to get out of there. Mr. Murphy, 6th grade teacher. We climbed down from the cavern and started making our way back. As soon as my cell phone was able to get a signal, I called police headquarters and reported that we had seen a body floating in the river. That's all I said. When the officer asked me if I could give her any details, I said no. It was stupid. I feel terrible about it. I apologize. It was wrong to deceive you folks. But I hope you believe me that what happened was an accident. Police Chief Rebecca Fish, Logbook, May 1st, 11:23 a.m., Gerald Murphy, teacher at Grand Canyon School, reports body floating in Colorado River downstream from Bright Angel Campground. May 1st, 9:12 p.m., found white van parked after hours in lot at Lee's Ferry. Arizona plate number SDF 759, registered in the name of Richard Milner. Judy Douglas, grade 6. We went back to school the next day and nobody said anything. I think I was still in shock. We just glanced at each other nervously, but I knew that I would never be the same person after what happened. I felt like I wasn't a kid anymore. I had seen somebody die. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. I didn't even know Milner, but I had the same feeling as when my dad died, like a part of me was missing. I started watching the news on TV to see if Milner's body turned up. I mean, it was floating in the river. At some point, it would wash up against the rocks and somebody would find it. But there was nothing about it in the newspaper or on TV. They just had all these reports about canyonist nuts wandering around because the end of the world was coming. Police Chief Rebecca Fish. The tourist season don't usually start up around here till school lets out and people take their vacations. But in the beginning of May, these lunatics were just streaming into the park in droves. I never seen anything like it. They all had this glassy look in their eyes. When you talk to them, they'd just say the world was gonna end on Mother's Day, and they wanted to be here. It got to be a real problem. You'd be walking down the street, and there would be three of them standing on their heads and chanting. Folks would complain, but what was I supposed to do? I couldn't arrest these loonies. There's no law against standing on your head in public. Maybe there should be. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. I had wiped the website clean as soon as I saw that people didn't realize canyonism was a joke. But it didn't make any difference. The crazies had printed out the whole website and made copies of it to give to their friends. They would walk around reading it like it was the Bible. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. We only had a few more weeks of school left. Nobody had found Milner's body. We began to relax and stop thinking about him all the time. Even if they found Milner, I figured there was no way anyone would know we had anything to do with his death. Judy Douglas, grade 6. We were a little team now, not just the four of us. Mr. Murphy and Ronnie were part of the team, too, because we knew a secret that nobody else knew. It wasn't a good feeling, not for me anyway. I wanted to tell somebody. Anybody. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. I was keeping an eye on Brenton. When we were using the homework machine, he was the one who couldn't keep his mouth shut. If he hadn't spilled the beans, we would probably still be using it today to do our homework. We never would have catapulted the computer into the Grand Canyon. None of this other stuff would have happened. Brenton isn't good at keeping secrets. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. I had no intention of telling anyone the full story of what happened to Milner in that cave. I had put it behind me, but something else was weighing on my mind. The chip. I had been carrying it around in my pocket ever since I got it back from Ronnie. I didn't want it out of my sight. It had caused too much damage. In the wrong hands, it could do a lot more. I decided that we had to get rid of it once and for all. Brenton's mom. Brenton told me that a few of his friends were coming over after school, and their teacher, Mr. Murphy, too. I had met him on back-to-school night, and he seemed very nice. I made cookies. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. We all went over to Brenton's house for a meeting. He took us down in the basement, and we sat around the ping-pong table. Then he took out the computer chip and put it on the table in front of us. That blinking red light was still attached to it. I hated that thing. Judy Douglas, grade 6. Brenton said we had to get rid of the chip, and we all agreed. Even Ronnie. The question was, how would we do it? Catapulting it into the Grand Canyon obviously didn't work the first time. Everybody had an idea. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. I said we should just crush it. I could smash that sucker with a sledgehammer in a second. Bam! No problem. Done. But nobody liked my idea. I don't know why. Usually simple solutions are the best ones. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. I've been to this website called Will It Blend? This guy with a high-powered kitchen blender takes everyday objects and sees if he can chop them up into tiny little pieces. So he takes, like, a baseball or a cell phone, and he blends it. It's cool. I suggested we try to blend the chip, but nobody wanted to ruin their blender. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. People were suggesting that we flush it down a toilet, bury it underground, burn it in a campfire, all kinds of crazy stuff. I remembered one of those Terminator movies where these machines take over the world and decide they're gonna get rid of the human race. Every time the good guys think they kill one of their cyborg assassins, it finds a way to come back to life. We were gonna have to come up with a foolproof method of getting rid of the chip forever. Judy Douglas, grade 6. It seemed to me that the right thing to do would be to turn the computer chip over to the police and let them figure out what to do with it. They would know a way to dispose of it safely, but everybody started yelling at me. They all said that if the authorities got a hold of a chip this powerful, they would use it to create some super weapon and start another war, or spy on American citizens. They may have been right. I don't know. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. I casually mentioned that I wished there was some way to make the chip disappear. Just get it off this planet so it would never hurt anyone again. Well, Snick got this gleam in his eye, and instantly I knew what he was thinking. Both of us had the same idea, almost at the same time. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. We could build a rocket. We could shoot the chip into space. It was brilliant. Genius. Mr. Murphy, 6th grade teacher. I was against the idea. Building a rocket is expensive, time-consuming, and dangerous. There's a good chance you can have a misfire. What if the thing lands in a populated area or on somebody's house? They begged me. Snick and Brenton actually got down on their knees. I thought it over and decided we had no other choice. We had to get rid of that chip, and the safest way to get rid of it permanently would be to shoot it into space. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. The boys got all excited at the idea of shooting the chip out of the Earth's atmosphere in a rocket. It didn't seem possible to me. But Mr. Murphy spent, like, his whole career working for NASA, so he knew what to do. Mr. Murphy, 6th grade teacher. The question is, where does the Earth's atmosphere end and space begin? There's no precise answer. It's not like there's a strict borderline, like on a map between two countries. But most people don't realize how thin the atmosphere is. The planet is sort of like a human cell, and the atmosphere is like the protective membrane around it. Judy Douglas, grade 6. Mr. Murphy told us there are traces of oxygen and nitrogen 100 miles up. But almost all of our atmosphere is the troposphere, which is only about 7 miles above the surface of the Earth. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. 7 miles? Who knew? No wonder people like Kelsey get so worked up about pollution and climate change. A 7-mile layer of protection surrounding the planet didn't sound like very much. I always thought it was like 50 miles at least. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. So if we could build a rocket that would fly 7 miles up, we could get the chip out of the Earth's atmosphere. It was the only way. Ha! Huh. Talk about rocket science. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. When I was little, I used to read books about the space program all the time. I remember that when a spaceship returns to Earth, it has to enter our atmosphere at a very precise angle. If it doesn't, it will either burn up during re-entry or bounce off the atmosphere and float into space. So if we could get a rocket with our chip inside above the atmosphere, chances are it would float away or burst into flames upon re-entry. And either one would be fine with us because we just wanted to get rid of the chip. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. Part of me was thinking that if we wanted the chip to burn up, why don't we just stick the thing in a microwave oven and set it on popcorn, you know, or just melt it with a magnifying glass. That would be a lot easier. But the idea of building a rocket with Mr. Murphy, who spent years working for NASA, sounded cool, so I said, let's do it. Police Chief Rebecca Fish, Logbook, May 5th, call from New Jersey hiker named Herbert Dunn. Saw a body floating near Glen Canyon Dam. Sent officers Comital and Levin to conduct preliminary investigation. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. We all went over to Mr. Murphy's house. or his garage, really, to start building the rocket. I wasn't much help. Mr. Murphy and Brenton were like real rocket scientists. They were talking about all this stuff, like ion pollution and pounds of thrust that made no sense at all. I never realized that rockets don't have wings like planes because the wings only help at low speeds. Once you get moving really fast, wings would just create more air resistance. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. Mr. Murphy had it all worked out. He has been building rockets all his life, and he gave me a crash course. Basically, you need to shoot liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen into a combustion chamber really fast and ignite them. When the hot gases produced by the combustion shoot out through the nozzle, it produces thrust. The more fuel, the more thrust. The more thrust, the higher you fly. That's how a liquid-fueled rocket works. It's simple, really. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. We worked really hard on the rocket. Brenton and Mr. Murphy did all the thinking and planning. The rest of us, me, Snick, Ronnie, and Judy, did the grunt work. Screwing in screws, getting materials they needed, picking up pizza and Chinese food to keep them going. Police Chief Rebecca Logbook. May 6th. The body that washed up at Glen Canyon Dam is Richard Milner, the guy whose van was found in the parking lot at Lee's Ferry. Alcohol in bloodstream. Possible suicide. No note. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. The rocket was coming along good. Mr. Murphy knows everything about aerodynamics and pollution and stuff. Some of his old NASA buddies helped him get his hands on the special rocket fuel that is, like, totally powerful. And you need top secret security clearance to get near it. This is the stuff they used to launch the space shuttle. We had to have that fuel to get the rocket as high as it needed to go. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. Maybe this would be the solution to a lot of our waste problems, it occurred to me. Instead of filling up landfills, why can't we just shoot our garbage into outer space? Get rid of it entirely. The same thing with pollution, spent nuclear fuel, and the exhaust from coal-burning power plants. We should just put that stuff in a rocket once a month and shoot it to the moon. It seems to me that if we can land a man on the moon, we can dump our garbage there. Police Chief Rebecca Fish Logbook, May 7th. Looks like that Miller fella did not just fall into the river. Cut marks on left cheek could only have been made by a sharp blade. I don't think the guy cut himself shaving. Looks like there might have been a struggle. Called Gerald Murphy, the teacher who spotted the body floating in the river. Not home. Left message. Police Chief Rebecca Fish, Logbook, May 8th. Murphy did not return call. Left another message. May have to go out to his house in person. Judy Douglas, grade 6. Mr. Murphy seemed like he was in a big hurry to finish building the rocket. He wouldn't tell us why. We were working on it every night. Only later did we learn the police had found Milner's body, and they were trying to reach Mr. Murphy to question him about it. He wasn't returning the calls. He was probably afraid he'd be sent to jail, and he wanted to get the rocket launched first. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. Finally, we finished building the rocket. It was the middle of May, I guess. Brenton's mom. I was a little bit upset because it was Mother's Day and he didn't get me anything. Usually, Brenton will make me a card or something, but all he seemed to care about was some top-secret project he and his friends were working on. He wouldn't tell me what it was. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. It was a Sunday morning. We wheeled the rocket out of Mr. Murphy's garage and into the field behind his house. It wasn't some cheap plastic model rocket, mind you. This one was as tall as I am and heavy. Judy Douglas, grade 6. We set the rocket up on a slab of concrete in the middle of the field. I guess there had been a swing set there a long time ago. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. A bunch of those canyonist nutcases were wandering around like always. Some of them saw our rocket, and they started walking over real slow. It was like Night of the Living Dead, with those zombies walking toward us. Judy Douglas, grade 6. One of them says to me, "Will this rocket take us to another world when the Earth explodes? I mean, really?" Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. Everybody was telling me to hurry up and launch the rocket before one of those canyonists got too close and damaged it. I opened the door of the nose cone and inserted the chip with the little red light. It was sad, in a way. I didn't want to see it go, but we had to get rid of it. "So long, old friend," I said to it. "We've got to do what we've got to do." Sam Dawkins, grade 6. One of those nutcases came over to us and asks if we know anybody named Brenton. So I pointed to Brenton. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. They all got down on their knees in a semicircle around me and started chanting, "Nutnerb." It is the immortal Nutnerb, spelled backward. "At last, we have found you. You are our savior." And all this stuff. They were thanking me for the weight they lost and frequent flyer miles they won. It was insane. I tried to tell them that canyonism was just a joke, but they wouldn't listen. They were praying to me. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. Suddenly, a cop car pulled up, and you got out. We were all yelling at Brenton, "Hurry up! The cops are here! We gotta get this baby up in the air!" Judy Douglas, grade 6. All these canyonists started eating Twinkies and chanting, "Life began here. It will end here. Life began here. It will end here." They were creepy. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. That's when you went over to Mr. Murphy and started questioning him. I heard you say, "The body of a man named Richard Milner turned up at Glen Canyon. Is there anything you want to tell me, Mr. Murphy?" Sam Dawkins, grade 6. "So Mr. Murphy says, 1 minute, officer," and you said, "Not 1 minute, now." Mr. Murphy, 6th grade teacher. I was yelling at everybody, Back away from the rocket. This is very dangerous." Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. The canyonists were telling everybody that the world was going to end and that I predicted it. Judy Douglas, grade 6. They were yelling that the aliens will return and only the canyonists will be saved. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. That's when you said to Mr. Murphy, "You got a permit for that thing? We got laws against firing off explosives so close to a national park." Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. As all this was happening, a black car pulled up and 4 Japanese guys wearing trench coats got out. They were coming over to us, saying they wanted their computer chip back. I remembered Milner told me that some gangsters were after him. Judy Douglas, grade 6. I was yelling, "Hurry!" Mr. Murphy, 6th grade teacher. I shouted, "Stand back!" Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. I said, "Don't we have a countdown?" Sam Dawkins, grade 6. So I say, "No time for a countdown, just fire it." Judy Douglas, grade 6. The Canyonists were coming from all over, and another police car pulled up, and those gangsters were coming toward us, and everybody was yelling and shouting at each other. I just covered my ears. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. And I pushed the button. Chapter 10. Afterward. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. So, that's pretty much what happened. You guys saw the rocket go up. Man, it was a beautiful thing. Everybody just stopped yelling and looked up. Then they were all clapping. The rocket just kept going and going. Finally, we lost sight of it. It never came down, at least not anywhere around here. I have to assume it made it out of the atmosphere. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. And for all we know, that little red light is up there in outer space right now, floating around, still blinking away. All right, folks, that is the end of the book, The Return of the Homework Machine by Dan Gutman. Dan Gutman has a lot of great kids' books, and I want to spend a couple of our future episodes reading some of these books from a series that he writes called My Weird School. So there's My Weird School, and then there's My Weirderest School, and then there's My Weirdtastic School. Like, those are all different series that he writes. In this book, Dr. Floss is the boss. It is from a series called My Weirderest School. So we're going to start that today. Dr. Floss is the boss. My name is AJ, and I hate going to the dentist. Dentists are weird. Why would anybody want to be a dentist? Who wants to stick their hands in people's mouths all day long? That's just gross. I only mention this because the other day, the weirdest thing in the history of the world happened. It was October 14th. We were in Mr. Cooper's class. We pledged the allegiance and did the word of the day like we do every day. That's when the weirdness started. "Okay, let's get to work," said Mr. Cooper. "Turn to page 23 in your math books." Ugh, I hate math. But that's when a voice came over the loudspeaker. It was Mrs. Patty, the school secretary. "Attention, students in Mr. Cooper's class," she announced. "Not again," muttered Mr. Cooper. "Please report to Mrs. Cooney's office." Mrs. Cooney is our school nurse. She has blue eyes that look like cotton candy yogurt, the kind with no sprinkles. One time she begged me to marry her, but I told her I couldn't because she was already married to some guy named Mr. Cooney. "Pringle up, everybody," said Mr. Cooper. We all lined up like Pringles. Everybody was wondering why we were going to the nurse's office. "Mrs. Cooney is probably going to check to see if we have head lice," said Andrea Young, this annoying girl with curly brown hair. "Headlights?" I said. "I don't have headlights." "Why would we bring headlights to school?" asked Ryan, who'll eat anything, even stuff that isn't food. "I don't think headlights would fit in my backpack," said Michael, who never ties his shoes. "You could bring two backpacks," suggested Alexia, this girl who rides a skateboard all the time. "One for each headlight." How would you get the headlights off a car? Asked Neil, who we call the nude kid, even though he wears clothes. Not headlights, you dumbheads, shouted Andrea. Head lice. Oh, those words sound way too much alike. Maybe Mrs. Cooney is going to weigh and measure us, guessed Emily, Andrea's crybaby friend. She does that every year. We walked 1,100,000 miles to the nurse's office. Alexia was the line leader. Ryan was the door holder. Good morning, boys and girls, said Mrs. Cooney as we filed into her office. As I walked by her, I whispered to Mrs. Cooney, I just want you to know that I don't have headlights. Good to know, AJ, she replied. We sat down on long benches. I had to sit next to annoying Andrea. Are you going to check us for head lice? Andrea asked. No, said Mrs. Cooney. Are you going to weigh and measure us? Asked Emily. No, said Mrs. Cooney. How many of you like going to the dentist? Andrea raised her hand. She was waving into the air like she was stranded on a desert island, trying to signal a plane. I love going to the dentist, she said. I go every 6 months. Me too, said Emily, who does everything Andrea does. I hate going to the dentist, I announced. Me too, everybody else said. Well, you kids are in luck, said Mrs. Cooney, because you don't have to go to the dentist today. The dentist is coming to you. What? Today is National Dessert Day, said Mrs. Cooney. So I thought it would be the perfect day to bring in a dentist to visit our school. I'd like to introduce you to Dr. Floss. This lady walked into the nurse's office. She was wearing a white coat, the kind that doctors wear. There was a name tag on it that said Dr. Betsy Floss. We gave her a round of applause by clapping our hands in circles, because that's what you're supposed to do whenever somebody is introduced. Nobody knows why. Happy National Dessert Day, she said. You all have such nice smiles. Look at all the things your teeth do for you. You see them when you smile. You use them to chew your food. They help you talk and sing, whisper and whistle. It's nice to see your smiling faces this morning. My name is Betsy Floss. Didn't Betsy Floss make the first flag? I whispered to Andrea. That was Betsy Ross, dumbhead, she whispered back. I was going to say something mean to Andrea, but I didn't have the chance. Is Betsy Floss your real name? Asked Ryan. Well, I took my husband's name when I got married, Dr. Floss told us. His last name is Floss. What name were you born with? Asked Emily. Betsy Toothbrush, replied Dr. Floss. Wait, I said, your last name was Toothbrush and you married a guy named Floss? Yes. Is your husband a dentist too? Asked Neil. No, of course not, replied Dr. Floss. Why would you think that? It was a guess, said Neil. Mrs. Cooney took a step forward. Tell us a little about yourself, Dr. Floss, she said. What made you decide to go into the field of dentistry? Well, let me think, said Dr. Floss. I used to be in the Army. What did you do in the Army? Asked Michael. I was a drill sergeant, she replied. And then she started cracking up. Get it? Drill sergeant. Ha ha! That's a little dentist joke. Everybody pretended to laugh, even though she didn't say anything funny. When grown-ups tell jokes, You should always pretend to laugh. That's the first rule of being a kid. When I got out of the army, continued Dr. Floss, I decided to go to dental school. I've been practicing dentistry for 10 years. Don't you get tired? I asked. Ha ha ha. I get it, said Dr. Floss. Any other questions? What do you do when you're not being a dentist? Asked Neil. Let me see, said Dr. Floss. I like to work with my hands. I play guitar. I collect old tools. I walk my dog. And I like to do road work. You work on the roads? I asked. I think road work means she goes jogging, Arlo, whispered Andrea, who calls me by my real name because she knows I don't like it. Did you kids lose any of your baby teeth yet? Asked Dr. Floss. Most of us raised our hands. I have a loose tooth right now, said Emily. Ooh, said Dr. Floss. Maybe it will fall out today. And if you're lucky, the tooth fairy will come to school. She's a good friend of mine. We invited Dr. Floss here today to talk about dental hygiene, said Mrs. Cooney. Who can tell me what hygiene is? That's when you say hello to somebody named Jean, I said. Andrea rolled her eyes and shot her hand in the air. Hygiene is all the things we do to stay healthy, she said. That's right, Andrea, said Mrs. Cooney. Andrea smiled the smile she smiles to let everybody know she knows something nobody else knows. Our students have been taught all about good hygiene, Dr. Floss, said Mrs. Cooney. They know they should brush their teeth at least twice a day. I brush my teeth 7 times a day, said Andrea. First I brush when I wake up in the morning, then I brush after breakfast, before lunch, after lunch, before dinner, and at bedtime. I have a toothbrushing calendar in my room. I put a check mark after every time I brush. Can you possibly be more boring? I asked Andrea. What is her problem? Why can't a truck full of toothpaste fall on her head? Kids should also eat a healthy diet for the sake of their teeth, said Mrs. Cooney. Isn't that right, Dr. Floss? No, replied Dr. Floss. Huh? We all said, which is also, huh? Backward. I wish kids would never brush their teeth or eat healthy, said Dr. Floss. If you all brush your teeth regularly and eat healthy food, there will be no need for dentists. I want kids to stop brushing their teeth, eat more candy and cupcakes, and drink sugary sodas. What? Wow, we all said, which is, Mom, upside down. That was weird. October is my favorite month of the year, said Dr. Floss. I'll tell you why. October 18th is National Chocolate Cupcake Day. The 23rd is National Boston Cream Pie Day. The 25th is National Greasy Foods Day. The 28th is National Chocolate Day. The 30th is National Candy Corn Day. And the 31st is National Candy Apple Day. It's also Halloween. Dr. Floss reached into her pockets and pulled out a handful of candy. She threw it up in the air for us to catch. I grabbed a Kit Kat. Dr. Floss is my favorite dentist in the history of the world. Mrs. Cooney closed her eyes and rubbed her forehead. Grown-ups are always rubbing their forehead. Nobody knows why. I'd love to talk more about dental hygiene, said Dr. Floss, but I have to go say hello to the other classes. No, don't go, everybody was hollering. We want more candy! I'll be back, said Dr. Floss. We'll be celebrating National Dessert Day all day. Yay! This was going to be the greatest day of my life! We left the nurse's office and walked 1,100,000 miles back to our classroom. Okay, turn to page 23 in your math books, Mr. Cooper told us. Math was boring. Why do we need math when we have calculators? Luckily, we didn't have the chance to finish the lesson because you'll never believe who walked through the door. Nobody! You can't walk through a door. Doors are made out of wood. But you'll never believe who walked through the doorway. It was Dr. Floss. This time, she was carrying a guitar. Yay! It's Dr. Floss! Everybody was shouting, more candy! Mr. Cooper closed his eyes and rubbed his forehead. I guess when you get older, your forehead gets itchy a lot. Would you kids like to hear a song? Asked Dr. Floss. Yes, shouted all the girls. No, shouted all the boys. Anytime anybody asks you if you want to hear a song, always say no. That's the first rule of being a boy. This is a song called My Favorite Things, said Dr. Floss. She strummed her guitar and started to sing. Snickers and Kit Kats and 10 almond joys, cookies and sodas for girls and for boys, milk duds and gumballs, a box of ring dings. These are a few of my favorite things. Ice cream and candy and cakes filled with sugar. It's fine with me if you eat your own boogers. Skittles and Hershey's and one Nestle Crunch. These are the things that I want you to munch. When you get sick, if you feel ick, and think of, and if you're gonna die, just eat lots more junk food that rots lots more teeth, 'cause this stuff I need to buy. That song was weird. Mr. Cooper rubbed his forehead again. He really needs to use more moisturizer. I think Dr. Floss is just joking, he told us. She doesn't really want kids to eat lots of junk food. Do you, Dr. Floss? But Dr. Floss wasn't paying attention. She put down her guitar and picked up a weird-looking puppet. It was a monkey puppet with a big mouth full of teeth. The monkey's hands were up in the air like somebody was robbing it. Dr. Floss's hand was inside the back of the puppet to make its mouth move. Hi, boys and girls, the monkey puppet said in a squeaky voice. My name is Muller, Muller Monkey, and this is my friend, Dr. Floss. Dr. Floss was trying not to move her mouth when the monkey spoke, but it was obvious that she was doing the talking. Hi, Muller, said Dr. Floss in her regular voice. We're going to talk about teeth, said Muller Monkey. But first, a few jokes. I like jokes, said Dr. Floss. Did you hear about the cell phone that went to the dentist? Muller Monkey asked us. No, I didn't, said Dr. Floss. What about it? It had Bluetooth, said Muller Monkey. Get it? Blue-tooth. Everybody laughed, even though the monkey puppet didn't say anything funny.
Hey,
Hey, do you know why kids don't like going to the dentist? Muller Monkey asked us. No, why? Asked Dr. Floss. Because dentists are boring, said Muller Monkey. Get it? Boring? I didn't get it, but I laughed anyway. You should always laugh after a monkey puppet tells a joke. That's the first rule of being a kid. Okay, enough with the jokes, said Muller Monkey. When you brush your teeth, blah, 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 back teeth, blah, 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 front teeth, blah, 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 tops and bottom, blah, 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 and don't forget to brush your tongue, blah, blah, blah. What a snooze fest. Muller Monkey was right. Dentists are boring, and so are their puppets. Do monkeys even brush their teeth? I whispered to Ryan. Not that I know of, Ryan whispered back. Then why is he telling us to brush ours? I whispered. Why is that monkey even speaking English? Whispered Ryan. Monkeys can't talk. Blah, 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 continued Muller Monkey. You don't have to brush all your teeth. Only brush the ones you want to keep. Ha-ha! That's a little dental joke there. Muller Monkey took about 1,100,000 hours to explain how to brush our teeth. Like we didn't know that already. We should talk about flossing now, said Dr. Floss. Who knows how to use dental floss? I do! Shouted Little Miss Perfect. I know everything in the world. I've been flossing since I was 4 years old. Don't you get tired? I asked. Anytime somebody says they've been doing something for years, ask them if they don't get tired. That's the first rule of being a kid. Very funny, Arlo, Andrea said, rolling her eyes. Flossing cleans between your teeth where food can hide and your toothbrush can't reach, said Muller Monkey. So you kids should never use dental floss, said Dr. Floss, because if you don't, the food will stay in there and cause holes in your teeth called cavities. And when you have cavities, you'll have to come to the dentist and your parents will have to pay me lots of money. And then I can buy my new car. That's a horrible attitude, Dr. Floss, said Muller Monkey. Hey, I'm just looking out for number one, said Dr. Floss. Just ignore her, said Muller Monkey. Flossing your teeth is a really good thing. I'm going to give each of you some dental floss so you can use it at home. Muller Monkey showed us how to use dental floss and gave each of us a little container of it. Yay! I love getting free stuff. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for today. This Young at Heart program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I hope you will join us next time for Young at Heart. If you have any ideas or comments, we'd love to hear from you. I'm Lavender. Thank you for listening.
Audio Journal is supported in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. We are a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.